Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday afternoon. ESPN 102.5, The Game. We had David Poyle join us from Edmonton to start last hour. Now we have Elliot Friedman join us from Toronto to start this hour from Sportsnet. Elliot, how you doing?
Good, guys. How are you doing today?
Well, obviously, Predators down 2-1 in the series. Things could be better. But David Poyle felt very optimistic that they were going to take care of business tomorrow and push this thing to Game 5. We feel the same way. But this last hour, after talking with David Poyle, you know, you see so much. You know how this works. You see so much reaction on social media from fans during the course of a game or an after a game. And we just simply said, okay, fine. It's easy to put out tweets. Now we're going to make you be the coach. Like, you call in and give us your move. So what's fun is you get all kinds of different perspective of what fans think a coach should do, right, with a lineup.
Yep.
Just your observation through the three games, what jumps out to you in this series?
Look, there's one reason you guys are down 2-1, and that's the guy who's playing goal for Arizona. I think for the most part, you guys have been the better team. I mean, it started very poorly, but I think if you take out, you know, the start of game number one, I would say for the most part, you guys have been better. And yesterday's game could have been 6-0 in the first 5 minutes if it wasn't for Kemper. And that's the most frustrating and aggravating thing is that, you know, because it's a short series, you run into a hot goalie and you can lose. And that's what you're looking at right now. Kemper has been better than Saros, and that's the difference. And I'm not throwing this all on Saros' head, but the fact is that their goalie has been the MVP of the series so far. And, you know, I think the other things I look at for you guys, that second line, I don't know. I see three really good players. Although Turris hasn't played great in Nashville, I see three really good players. But, you know, if someone had told me before the series that Arvidsson, Johansson, and Forsberg would find kind of their old form and you guys would be in trouble against Arizona, I don't think I would have believed it.
Well, clearly the second line has, you know, dictated a lot of discussion. Certainly with the fan base, the media, and the players and coach. I mean, they're getting asked the questions. John Hines is getting asked about second line production or lack of, because this, especially this time of year, right, it's simply about production. It's not about close calls or banging the puck off the post. I mean, it's about putting it in the back of the net, and there's a lot of money on that line, and they've got to figure out, and of course, asking people to call in and loaded lines of people playing coach, there were a lot of people, you know, saying they making moves on that second line. Let's go back to the goaltending part. Would you make a move? Because there were also people that said, hey, Pekka hasn't seen any action. He's the vet. Let him play game four. How do you feel about that?
I think if you're the head coach or the goalie coach of the Nashville Predators, you have one question to answer. Sorry, you have two questions to answer. Number one is, who do we think gives us a better chance to win? Okay? And if the answer is Saros, you don't have a two. If the answer is Rene, you have a two. And that second question is, can we reasonably expect him to win when he's played 30 minutes of, well, what did he play? 30 minutes the other night in the exhibition game?
Yep.
30 minutes of hockey in 6 months. And he's going in there against a team that's played three games.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you this. The guy's in his late 30s. He's one of the greatest players in the history of your franchise. You guys know him better than anybody else. If you call his name, he's going in net, and he's going to tell you he can win. I think the only question is it reasonable that you can expect him to win that game under those circumstances? And because you know if you say it to him, do you want to go? He's going to say yes. So you almost have to make that decision independent of him.
Okay. With that being said then, Elliot, we you're right. We know Pekka through and through. We have been around him his entire career. One guy that we haven't been, and I want the outsider's perspective because a lot of people are wondering, yes, it's been a long storyline in this market. But Matt Duchene finally happened, and now they're paying him $8 million a year. But you've probably watched him more closely than we have here in Nashville, even though we've had this season as a body of work. Is this typical Matt Duchene? I mean, what should be realistic expectations for Matt Duchene, especially this time of year?
They should be high. You know, like it's got nothing to do with, you know, the fact that you guys have seen him and or you guys haven't seen him as much as I have or anyone else has, or maybe you've seen him more this year than we have. Look, he's one of your highest paid players. He carries a big ticket, and with that comes the expectation that at this time of year, he's going to be a difference maker. And, you know, yesterday is the kind of play where, you know, that goal got disallowed, where, you know, they're not going to say it publicly because nobody wants to embarrass anyone publicly, but you pull your hair out. Or, you know, in the case of John Hines, you tug your collar or something like that. you know, like, that can't happen. Like, you know, it wasn't like somebody was barreling at him to knock him offside. There was no excuse for that to happen. And, like, you know, everybody makes mistakes. We've all been there. We all have moments that you look at and say, boy, you know, what was I thinking or how did I get that wrong? But I just think that, you know, you have to expect a lot of him. You should demand a lot of him. He's here to win these kinds of games. And that's a huge mistake in that moment. And I would expect tomorrow in game four, he should come out like a house on fire. He should want to come out and say, that was on me. It sucks. And I'm going to do everything I can to fix it. But the expectations should be high on Duchene. You know, when you're one of the top paid players, that's life in the big city.
Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, it's kind of ironic. Remember, the rule was put in because of a goal that Matt Duchene scored on Chris Mason years ago where he was way offside. What was weird about it is it was so obvious he was offside. That was one that took about 10 seconds to realize it. You kind of hoped, in retrospect, I kind of wish they had called it initially so that he wouldn't feel the weight of, oh, man, I'm the guy that screwed up the goal. Because if they just blow the whistle, you never know what happens with Turris's shot. And so, that, like you said, now how does he deal with the adversity, the weight of knowing that that happened? With everybody saying, hey, you're the guy that was brought in to win. You're making $8 million. We need this guy. Your lines. There's a lot of pressure being thrown his way, and you can tell he feels it.
Yes, and I think that's true. You know, one of the things that I think should happen is that, you know, first of all, I think that Duchene understands it. You know, he's been a high pick. He's been in pressure situations. You know, he's been around for a long time. He's a veteran. He's seen everything. And, you know, you know what, I think he's got like I think the big thing is that the biggest thing is not to put too much pressure on yourself. And that's going to be the big challenge. I've learned in life that when you're going through difficult things, the only thing you can do is compartmentalize, right? Mm-hmm. Like Matt Duchene can't come out right now or in his first shift tomorrow and win the whole game. But what he can do is make sure that every shift he's out there, he's making a difference. And that's all you can do. You've got to, you know, kind of rein him in, calm him down, make sure he prepares the same way. Say, this is what happened. This is how you're going to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then say, look at him and say, I know I'm going to get a big game out of you tomorrow. And that's all he can do is be ready and prepared. And when that puck drops tomorrow, be prepared to skate like the wind and put coyotes through the boards and take every chance that he can make and create all the best plays he can make. But, you know, the one thing that concerns me the most from your perspective is just that it just hasn't worked all year with those guys. And we talked about this earlier, about how many of your forwards have had a rough year. And we said that it doesn't matter anymore because we're coming back out of this. They've been off for 5 months. You get the chance to rewrite history. And your first line has done that.
Absolutely.
They're back more to being like themselves. But the second line, and, you know, I have to tell you, as much as everybody's talking about Duchesne, I'm still blown away by the whole tourist thing. Like, I am a big tourist fan. I can't figure it out. And I know he scored on that play that was erased. But I think Granlund's a hell of a player, too. And I just look at the three of them together, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why it's not working.
Yeah, I think everybody is wondering if there's a little tweak that happens based on that for Game 4. Elliot, let me ask you about sort of big picture here.
Yeah,
you've got an 11 seed, the Coyotes, leading 2-1. You have both 12 seeds up 2-1. We wind it back months ago when this came out, right? And we did ask the question. You know, this was the risk you run potentially. Now it's great drama. But isn't it interesting about Montreal and Chicago on the verge of advancing when they had virtually no shot of making the playoffs, but here they are?
You know, the funny thing about that, guys, is that I know a guy who knows some of the guys in both Chicago and Montreal. And he knows I like to wager. He knows I like to gamble. And he said, Elliot, this was a few weeks ago, before the training camps opened. He said, Elliot, I'm going to do you a favor. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? And he said, I know you like to gamble. I'm telling you, don't gamble on the Blackhawks or the Canadiens. And I said, why is that? And he goes, because those two teams, they don't want to play. They gave up on the season. They had some battles during the calls. They really weren't enthusiastic about it, although they're going to be here. And I was like, okay, that's good intel. And last night, as Montreal won that game and Edmonton was about to lose, our host here, David Amber, he said to me, that was really good advice you got on that gambling, because I told this story on our podcast a couple weeks ago. And you know what it tells me, guys? It's that you should never underestimate the competitive drive of A-level people. Like, if you're an elite athlete or you're an elite business person, or you're an elite sports radio host, you are competitive. You want to go on and you want to do the best every day. And we don't always do our best every day, but if you have that attitude, you're probably going to be better more often than not. And I think what these teams like the Blackhawks and the Coyotes and the Canadiens have done is they're like, maybe we weren't so thrilled about this, but we're here now. And our pride's on the line. And our pride matters. And we're here to play. Like, I have to tell you guys, the quality of hockey overall has been much better than what I expected. I thought
really?
These games were going to be not so rough, not so nasty. Boy, they've been rough and nasty. They've been competitive. I've been very impressed.
And do you like the look, Elliot, the way the games are being presented? I do. I think it's about as well as it could have been presented in terms of no crowd, the backdrop, the noise that they're trying to work in there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they're really trying. Like, I've gotten a good laugh out of some things, like in the Edmonton building, the one night they put up, today's attendance zero. And, you know, they forgot to put up throw the hats for Svechnikov's hat trick for Carolina. And then they made sure they had someone do it for McDavid's one for Edmonton. Like you can't fault the effort. You cannot fault the effort. I like the goal songs. I like the goal horns. I like the anthem singers from your own building. I like all that stuff. I think it's been very impressive, and I think they're really trying to make the best of it. And I hope that when we get to the semifinal, they can indeed bring the families there, because I think that'll make it even better.
That's the perfect lead into my question, Elliot. Elliot Friedman is with us. And it's a general question. It's not directed at any one player, but how much do you think some of these guys that weighed a lot on this, thought about it a lot, ultimately decided to play, but either missed their families or they're worried about their families in some way, how much do you think that might have affected some of these guys in the way they're playing?
You know, I think it's hard not to forget. Like, did you see that video the Hurricanes put out yesterday?
I did not, actually.
Okay, so you got to check this one. It's on their social media. So after they knocked out the Rangers, they shared on their Twitter account that I saw a video of all the players sitting in a meeting room and the team playing videos from their families wishing them good luck. And some of those guys got really emotional. Like, it's a great video. I think it's hard. We've had a lot of family time over the past few months. Like, some guys have joked to me, it's actually worked out really well, which I kind of laugh. But I think for most of them, it's hard. But I think the setup has been better. Like, I think the one thing we're learning now, guys, is that if you want to try to play sports, there's only one way to do it. And it's the way that we're doing it, the NBA is doing it, the soccer's done it. It's not the Major League Baseball way. And if you're football right now, you got to be really worried. And I think that these guys have, now that they're here, is it perfect? No. But it appears to be safe, knock on wood. Let's hope it stays that way. And I think the quality of play is better, and they're enjoying it more than they thought. And I think that makes life a lot easier on them.
Elliot, we know you got a role. I can't imagine. It's going to be very interesting what we're going to be talking to you about next Thursday, right? I'll be very curious to see the fallout of what happens.
Well, I mean, for the sake of Nashville, maybe it's a Predators come from behind victory.
Let's hope. That is the plan for sure. I think it's going to be exciting to see. I think some of these are going to get pushed to five, and it'll be interesting to see how they play out. Thanks for the visit, as always.
All right, guys, have yourselves a great weekend.
You too. That is Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. You can also check out 31 Thoughts. It's a fantastic podcast they do. And so let's come back and talk about some of that on the other side. I thought there was some really interesting stuff there, as always, with him on Thursdays at 1 o'clock. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A couple things to pass along before we get into our discussion. Looks like Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons,
yeah,
who's expected to be a top 10 pick. He's a stud. He has told Jimmy Franks or James Franklin that he will not play this season. He is out. He is just going to start worrying about the draft. That joins Minnesota Golden Gophers top receiver and potential first round pick. Also, Virginia Tech lost their cornerback, who's expected to be a first round pick. And these are some big opt-out. These are guys that are projected to go very high that are just saying, you know what? I think I'm just going to worry about the draft.
And that's the common theme. Projected to go high, so why risk it?
Yep. So bad news for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions is their big-time stud linebacker is opting out. Now, we talked about, speaking of opting out, the NFL, that deadline is in an hour and a half. So it's at 3 yep. o'clock our time. 3 o'clock our time to opt out. And so I guess we will have closure on Vic Beasley today, right? Here very soon?
I mean, I would assume so. I mean, if
we'll that's... know something before we go on the air tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, I mean, well, we'll know that he hasn't communicated and didn't show up and didn't give them an answer past the deadline, so that changes the whole conversation. So that's what we'll know.
Yeah, I guess if he doesn't opt out, then we also know too, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a bigger conversation. If he doesn't opt out and doesn't say, hey, I'm opting out, but then doesn't say, yeah, I'll be there, or doesn't communicate anymore, then he's in breach of contract.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is
come
just
on, Vic.
A mess.
Vic,
it's
come
such
on.
A mess.
Vic.
Yeah, it's getting
on,
a little
Vic.
Weird. It's getting a little weird. Awkward.
Awkward.
Greg Wyshynski also putting out, listen, this is pretty, that guest Barry Trotz had told reporters that he would be in favor of a 2014 playoff on a permanent basis because of the parity in the league, because of kind of how all this has played out thus far. Pretty interesting.
Boy. I don't think that's going to happen. By the way, today is the anniversary of Barry Trotz being hired by the Predators back in 1997.
Wow.
Wow.
On this date.
Barry Trotz had hair. Go look at the
pictures. He had more hair.
He did. Go look at the pictures.
He sure did.
A lot of people we know had hair in 1997.
Aww. You know?
I was at the press conference. We could probably find a picture of me near Barry Trotz, and you could observe the changes that have happened.
Okay, let's talk about. And by the way, yeah, I agree. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't believe we will see that moving forward. But just wanted to pass it along because Barry Trotz said it. So here we go. Elliot Freeman. When I asked him about Matt Duchene, I thought his answer was interesting, and more importantly, what he said about that second line. So here is what Elliot Freeman said about Predators' Matt Duchene.
It's got nothing to do with the fact that you guys have seen him and you guys haven't seen him as much as I have, or anyone else has, or maybe you've seen him more this year than we have. Look, he's one of your highest paid players. He carries a big ticket, and with that comes the expectation that at this time of year, he's going to be a difference maker. And, yesterday is the kind of play where, that goal got disallowed, where, they're not going to say it publicly because nobody wants to embarrass anyone publicly, but you pull your hair out. Or, in the case of John Hines, you tug your collar or something like that. that can't happen. It wasn't like somebody was barreling at him to knock him offside. There was no excuse for that to happen. Everybody makes mistakes. We've all been there. We all have moments that you look at and say, boy, what was I thinking, or how did I get that wrong? But I just think that, you have to expect a lot of him. You should demand a lot of him. He's here to win these kinds of games. And that's a huge mistake in that moment. And I would expect tomorrow in game four, he should come out like a house on fire. He should want to come out and say, that was on me. It sucks. And I'm going to do everything I can to fix it. But the expectation should be high on Duchene. When you're one of the top paid players, that's life in the big city.
So I asked him, you've seen him more than he's been here this year. It's been a constant storyline, but he's finally here. But it's not like, we were paying close attention to Matt Duchene his entire career, especially when he spent time in the Eastern Conference, like maybe you have. So what is reasonable to expect? What is fair to expect this time of year from Matt Duchene? And that was his answer. And it's a lot of what we talk about with athletes in general when you sign the big contract. He is a big ticket item. He is a big name in the sport. He has a big contract. And this is guys that fit that bill. They're supposed to produce the most important time of the year. And postseason play is the most important time of the year. So he's saying, hey, it's not unrealistic. He should. You should expect him to be good. He's getting paid to be good this time of year.
I thought it was a great answer. I thought about this, too, while he was giving that answer, because I think we would all agree 100% with what he said. And I agree with his assessment of the goal. It's the kind of thing that cannot happen, and it did happen, and there's nothing you can do with it now. I think, as he said, I would expect him to come out like a house on fire. I'm hoping the same thing. What about this, guys? It was just the way that the game is being covered, the uniqueness of the situation. He doesn't have, as Joe Rexroad pointed out in his article, a big, huge crowd of media around him. Matt, what happened? How could that happen? What's the deal? He didn't face any questions after the game. He didn't have to. Does that affect him at all, not having to face the music on it? I would think that as an athlete, it really doesn't. Because here's the other thing I thought of. He's not in the town. He's in Edmonton. How much are they really talking about it there? Unless he flips on and starts listening to local radio shows here, how many people are really even discussing it? He can insulate himself from hearing the noise, and that will be the focus. But I think any athlete who's a competitor and has been on a team, the biggest weight is that you just feel like you let the team down. I know he feels terrible about what happened, and he's a competitor, and he wants to bounce back. But do you think about the noise factor at all, guys, in the uniqueness of it? Do you think that has any effect on him?
I think that's an interesting point because I know, you know, and it's different right now with media availabilities because we don't go in the locker room and don't have the access. Everything's done via Zoom. It's all virtual, and the NHL is handling a lot of it. So after the game yesterday, it was Victor Arvidsson and Roman Josi, and he was not available. It wasn't Matt Duchene. And I was surprised and not surprised all at the same time, but I know I was sitting there going, well, I kind of want to hear from – I mean, Victor Arvidsson scored a goal, fine, but I kind of want to hear from Matt Duchene. I want to hear it from his perspective. I understand putting the captain up there, having the captain speak for the team, but I think you make a good point because he's not getting the media pressure, at least to his face, like he would, you know, if this were normal circumstances. Because if this were normal circumstances – there would have been a bunch of us gathered around his locker last night asking him about what happened, asking him the question.
Right, but I'm not saying no team would put him, when you only choose two players in a game you lost, a guy that didn't score a goal. It'd be one thing if he scored two goals and had that happen, and they didn't put him out there. But, you know, you put guys that played well in the game out there. It's just the uniqueness of it. In a normal alert, you have those guys, and then you open the locker room and you talk to anybody else you want to talk to, and that's when he would have gotten the huge amount of attention.
I think that was so Joe's, that was Joe's point, though.
Yeah, it's not like he was blaming the team for not putting him out there. No team would have put him out there in those circumstances. It's just the way it was, you know.
Well, I know they requested it,
but that's just you're not going to put him out there.
Yeah, I think that was the whole point. Is you know you. Because of the unique perspective, okay, when you say nobody will put him out, but that's because, okay, if you choose not to put him out there in a press conference setting, he's still going to get the question asked because everybody's going to go to the locker. I mean, he'll be first one up, right, you know, in the locker room. So the question gets asked many times. And so I guess that was Joe's point is, okay, so nobody has the ability to go in the locker room and nobody has the ability to go to his stall and ask the question or – follow up with, you know, ask the questions to it because he would get hit with a couple different versions of it.
Sure.
And asked to talk about it. And Matt Duchene, by the way, is more than capable and has the ability to handle anything that comes his way. He's fine in that
setting.
And
has in the past. He is excellent with the media.
Yes.
He's excellent with the media.
The point is what I took from Joe's comments that I heard this morning, and I know he's written on it, but I heard him talking about it with Robbie Stanley on Morning Drive is, okay, so you know the unique perspective. And so there's only one way that anybody can talk to him, and that is through the Zoom press conference, right? That's it. And so I think he was disappointed that nobody got the, you know, it's not, I will say this, when you say, you know, is Roman Josi able to handle all the questions? Sure, of course, we know. That's why he's the captain, and he can handle anything. It's not fair for people to ask, because it was asked to Roman Josi. It's not fair, and you totally get his answer. What is he supposed to say? It's his teammate. He's the captain. He's not going to say anything about the play other than, you know, that stuff happens. And that's exactly he answered it exactly how I expected him to answer it. But it's not fair for Roman Josi or other teammates to ask questions or answer questions about that play.
Right.
It's Matt Duchene's question to answer,
but there's
not everybody else.
Good point.
And now there's this extra layer of protection for the players where
unintentional.
I'm not saying that in a shot towards the league or the team or anything like that. It's the circumstance that has created this, and so you just kind of have to get your information the way you can and talk to the players that are given to you. And so it's very different, and it's unfortunate that it's different that way, but it's just a circumstance of what's going on.
You know, this is the way I view it, guys. I think it is incredibly important for organizations, and look, we're talking about for the sake of this discussion, we're talking about professional athletes and pro teams. Okay, we're not talking about the college level because to me, the college level is different. It's 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. It's just different. Okay, they're not pros. They're not professional athletes. They're not getting paid for their services. So for the sake of this discussion, I think it's at the pro level. I think it's vitally important for organizations in any sport. This is, I know we're talking hockey here, but this is for any sport. I think it's important for the people, especially in that specialized field of media relations, because they handle all this stuff, right? But the organization and those departments, to know your personnel, know your room, know your players, whether it's, you know, I know it's easier on the NBA side because the rosters are small. On the football side, it's much more difficult because the rosters are the biggest. But it also is your job. You're around them all the time. Know your personnel. Know your room. There are guys, there are plenty of athletes that are more than capable of handling any situation you throw at them. Okay, it doesn't matter. Good. Everybody can handle good. Let's throw good out. Good is weak. Everybody can handle good and winning. That's when everybody wants to talk. But we're talking about the bad stuff, when it's more difficult. There are so many guys that are wired that if you just would let them handle it, you'd be amazed at how well they would handle it. Mm-hmm. Instead, so many times there's this, like I said, this is every professional sport. So many times there's this push to the, oh, no, we can't let them talk. Don't let them, put them in that bad spot. When it makes it worse for them. It's like when we've talked about the injuries. Sometimes you make it worse by not talking about it. In this case, sometimes you make it worse when you don't let them talk, when they are more than capable of answering the questions and giving everybody satisfactory, you know, answers, whether you agree with it or not. It was a good answer, and that's the way they feel. They've addressed it, and everybody moves on.
Yeah.
I just think so many times I don't understand why there are so many incredible athletes that are also great talkers and know how to handle every situation, and yet sometimes they are protected like they're not capable of handling that, and they are. Just let them do it.
Right. Well, and, I mean, as you know my job post-game, every home game, I'm in the locker room, win or lose, doesn't matter. And this year, at times, there have been some awkward, you know, locker rooms because it was a bad game. But guess what? I've talked to players, and Matt Duchene's one of them. I've talked to Matt Duchene after losses and after bad games. I've talked to him after wins. You know, and there are some guys that handle it better than others.
And that's what I was going to say. Not all of them are, though. But it's your job to know who is in those spots more than capable and who you would put out there to let them handle it. And there are certain guys that just aren't. And that's fine, too. That's okay.
Yes.
And you know that room or rooms in any sport, there are certain guys that aren't good in that spot. And so you maybe then I understand that because it may go south. You know, like you don't put them in that spot. But it's up to you to know who can and who can't.
Right, because and you guys, I'm sure, have been in this situation too, because I've been in that spot before where I've been with somebody that it's not – they don't handle it well, or it's not their strong suit, and it's awkward, and it's a short
interview. I have an example. Darren, you will remember this well. Vince Young, quarterback, Titans, rookie of the year. Went through the struggles. Remember that there was a preseason where he really was struggling, and there were all kinds of questions. We asked for him every day at training camp, but it was clear that the Titans at the time were trying to protect him because he did not excel in those situations.
No,
there's no way. I mean, and we were frustrated. We're like, he's your quarterback. Mm-hmm. We want to talk to the quarterback. Just like that was our job, and it was their job to try to put him in the best position as possible. So that was a tough dilemma because they definitely, and as we know, over time, history has shown, Vince Young was not always great at handling himself in that. But as you said, Darren, if they had sort of just allowed him to grow into it a little bit more and not been so protective, maybe he might have learned how to handle a little bit better, right? Or,
yeah.
Or maybe he would have found that the more accessible he was, the better the media would have been, and he wouldn't have been maybe as defensive. You know, that can be part of it too.
Well, you're right, because when you're limited and then you're made available, then you're going to get everything, right? You're going to get everything all at once.
Then there's a big avalanche coming.
Right, you got the heavy workload because you're going to get an avalanche of questions. But you're right. If it's that one's a tough one because that is exactly what I'm talking about, and that's a perfect example. He was a guy that struggled in that department, and the Titans recognized that, so they did do their job. They recognized that he could struggle in that department, and that was not his strong suit. But yet, if he's going to be your franchise quarterback and your starting quarterback, he's going to have to do this at some point. So how do you get better at it? It's just like the game, right? If you don't take reps, how are you going to get better at it? It's like anything. If you're not taking reps, then how are you going to get better? And so there is that fine line of, okay, well, how do you get out of that? How do you get him better? Because it's not, you know, he's got to talk. And as you said, if it's very, very limited, it could get rough in a limited role, especially if things aren't going great, because he's going to get the avalanche of questions, and he wasn't exactly the best at handling those. But there are so many guys. I think it's more to me about the frustration of the guys who can handle it, and it would be perfectly fine in those settings, and yet they're not given the opportunity.
Yeah, and I'll tell you somebody, and I'll see if you guys agree, but that was good at it, and it just he wasn't available a lot in these situations. But PK Subban, anytime after a loss or a tough game, I had any type of interaction with him in a post-game setting, he was very honest. He was willing to answer the questions. Now, he, you know, being the type of –
And he knew how to do it.
And he knew how to do it. But and a lot of the reason that he wasn't put in that position was just because he did so much media-wise because of, you know, obviously who he is and from a national standpoint and all of that. But anytime in the – you know, there were times – that I was doing the post game and they're like, here's PK, and it was after a loss, and he was honest about it. He would tell you what he saw and what he thought and what they needed to do, and was a professional in it. So, you know, again, it's just all about how the guy is wired. There are some guys that they're so competitive and they carry everything with them on their shoulder that they're just not good in that situation because they're going to either freeze up or they're going to say something they might regret later. So it's just knowing that, and it's on, you know, the teams to know that. And in some cases it's on the interviewer of you have to get to know these guys as well. And that's, you know, that's one reason why all of us, well, we're in that position.
Yep. We'll come back and touch a little bit on the second line to wrap things up, go a little bit more in depth. I thought Elliot spoke, even more than just Duchesne. He spoke on Turris and Granlin as well. So we'll do that to close up shop here on this Thursday. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Five minutes in, game three. Vancouver, Minnesota is underway. No score. That series even up at one. It's interesting. The storyline, at least any time they're talking about the Wild, it is the focus is on one guy. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that.
Oh,
I think
I've
you know
it.
Where I'm going with it. I mean, the focus is about 22. It's Kevin Fiala. He's already got three goals in the series already through two games. But anytime they are bringing anything up about the Wild, it's about Kevin Fiala's play.
He's done well, but I think it shows
he,
you
he has grabbed the spotlight.
He has, but you know, Dean Evason being the head coach has helped that. I mean, obviously something clicked with those two going back to his days in Milwaukee, and I think that's now carried over because he has really shined once that coaching change took place. And it's funny that you look at the two guys involved in that trade, Mikhail Granlin coming over here, Fiala going over there, when coaching changes were made, that's when you really saw them start to flourish with their new teams. So just funny how that works out.
So somebody will take a 2-1 lead after today's action. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what Elliot had to say about Turris and Granlin. And it was pretty interesting that he just was like, I guess he was kind of like throwing up his arms, like a lot of people have, of just they can't figure out why it hasn't worked here, right? Like everybody has seen Turris's body of work pre-getting to Nashville. Everybody's seen Granlin's body of work in Minnesota with the Wild. And he touched on them saying he just said he can't figure out why it hasn't worked. What did you guys make of that?
Aren't we saying the same thing here? Yeah, it was just interesting that it matched up perfectly
exactly.
with what everybody's been saying here for a long time. I think you know what? We said it the minute they signed Matt Duchene is, okay, now what happens with Kyle Turris? Because that was the role, the number two center. So they've been trying to put the pieces together all year, and it has been the thing that they've tinkered with the most. And here they are again having the same dilemma. And I think that's probably the biggest thing they're – if I had to guess, that's probably the biggest thing that they're considering. And I think David Poile hinted at it as well. Do you keep that trio together or do you try something different? It's not like you can't switch them back if you – or it's not like you can't start the game with those three and then go to plan B in the middle of the game and shake it up. But I think from the get-go, they knew they had kind of one too many centers, especially with Craig Smith really a right wing only and not a guy that can play the left wing on the second line. So that put him on the third line because that is something they tried. So, I mean, they have what they have. And I think it'll be a huge topic, obviously, when the season is over, even if they win a couple of rounds. Right, it'll still be something that you look at the lineup and you're like, that doesn't quite fit.
And that's the confusing part of just that you look at the caliber of these players, but for whatever reason, the puzzle pieces are, it's almost like they're the right shape, but you know, the wrong piece, different color, however you want to put it, whatever analogy you want to use, but you just can't quite make it all work, or at least they haven't to this point, And it's mind-boggling because we all loved the moves when they made them. And for whatever reason, it just isn't working. So, yeah, the fact that Elliot brought it up and we're asking the question, I mean, I think Willie said it best. It goes back to, well, we've been asking that for a while of why. And there's just not an answer.
So the gut feeling today, a change on the second line? Yes or no?
I say yes.
I think yes.
As in... Moving the parts around, you're not talking about sliding anybody out, right? Just moving parts around?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think they move
on the
some
second
parts.
Line. I think all three of those guys will be in the game. I think they could be split up, though.
Okay. And what do you think is the most I think we all agree on that. What is the most likely scenario? Anybody feel good about a likely scenario?
I mean, I like the versatility of
Yarncroke. I think Turris moves down, Yarncroke moves up. If I had to put it in its most simplest form, that would be a prediction
because we've seen no knowledge
behind it. I don't know.
Just because we've seen it?
Yeah, I think those are guys that have played together. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ryan sent me this earlier, these lines. Granlund, Duchene, Smith, Grimaldi, Bonino, Yarncroke, Sissons, Turris, Blackwell. What do you think about those?
Okay, say it one more time. Slow it down. Second line.
Granlund, Duchene, Smith.
Okay.
Rocco, Bonino, Yarncroke. Sissons, Turris, Blackwell.
I don't think they're going to do anything with the third line, personally.
That's a pretty radical shift.
Shifting to me goes between the second and fourth line. I think they keep the third line intact. I'll tell you what, though.
Just keep in mind in the backdrop, you're not being badly outplayed, and the numbers with these lines are pretty good. The underlying numbers are heavily in Nashville's favor. So it's not like they're not getting anything at the net. It's not like they're playing poor defense. But you might need a little shakeup.
Yeah. Chris Massaro spoke today via Zoom to the media. And apparently, by the way, did you know that MTSU was supposed to play Duke and Virginia Tech and UConn?
Yeah, I knew that.
UConn, of course, is not playing this fall. And, of course, the ACC is not playing. There's not going to be any out-of-conference. So I guess Chris Massaro, from what I can tell, this just happened in the last hour or so, I guess they're going to play a home-and-home with Troy, from what I can read through on that? Looks like week one will be at Floyd Stadium in Murfreesboro, and then there could be a matchup. I guess the UConn game was supposed to be in November, and I guess they would do that with Troy, so they would do a home-and-home with Troy this year, which is interesting. Obviously,
yeah,
you never see that on a football schedule.
No. I did see that he was speaking, but was unable to kind of keep up with some of the details, but I know he broke down a lot of different things. But, yeah, you got to get creative this year. I mean, that's what all these schools are doing. We're seeing a lot of things that we've never seen before. But if you want to play, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah, home and home in football. Interesting. There you go. All right, that will do it for us today on this Thursday. It'll be game four tomorrow. Same time, same channel as games two and three. So it'll be 12:30 pregame, 1:30 puck drop. We'll see if the Predators can keep this series alive and push it to game five on Sunday. By the way, when will we find out a possible game five time?
Probably sometime tomorrow or Saturday.
We have to see how many games get extended to the limit.
Okay, but we didn't learn tomorrow's time until yesterday afternoon.